swallow the lead column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Who is it? Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 481. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, got some good stuff to talk about here on this episode of the podcast as the Phillies just came off a two-game sweep of the New York Yankees at Citizens Bank Park, and they are actually playing their best ball of the season so far here in the month of June as they get ready to take on two really tough teams out west in the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Francisco Giants. They're just getting ready to play the first game of the three-game series against the Dodgers as we are recording this. So joining me to talk about the Phils and where they stand right now is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Liz, of course, you know from Yahoo Sports and continued success and all the other fine things she does for us here at the Good Fight podcast feed. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. What's going on?
I'm here and excited to talk about the Phillies. And I mean that truly and not ironically.
Yeah, there's no sarcasm there at all.
No.
We're actually looking forward to talking about this baseball team.
And, yes.
It's a refreshing change of pace, I think, for sure.
Especially neat. I like it.
This is kind of what we signed up for back in 2015, hoping we'd get there eventually. But we'll see if it can last for more than 1 week. And Justin Clue also with us from Baseball Prospectus and continued success in the Dirty Inning and all the stuff he does over at the Hittin' Season Patreon with Liz. Check out the Hittin' Season Patreon, by the way. We go on to patreon.com/hittin'season. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. What's up, bud?
You know, with the All-Star voting campaigns ongoing and the Phillies kind of going in on Gene Segura because of how well he's been playing as somebody to represent the Phillies, I wasn't surprised to see that he's the team leader in hits. But you know who's second on the Phillies in hits?
I'm going to say Andrew McCutchen.
It's Reese Hoskins somehow.
Is it? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was a surprising tidbit, but I think it kind of has to do with the fact that he's played in like almost every game.
Yes, he has.
At this, you know, and some of these other, like Gene Segura's played in 47 games. So
yeah,
it's less. So I don't know. That surprised me that he was second on the team in producing at the plate.
Well, Hoskins is having a real rough go of it right now. Thankfully, the rest of the lineup is cooking, but he had been pretty consistent all year until this last little bit. And, you know, I think we've talked about it on the podcast. I know I talked about it on a podcast, and I don't think it was when I was with you guys. It might have been on episode 480, where I just said this, you know, chill out about Reese Hoskins a little bit. You know, maybe we did talk about it. I'm not remembering. But, you know, just, you know, trying to keep in my mind, he's not going to be Mr. 35-40 homer, 280 batting average guy. It's just he's going to be Pat Burrell, and that's cool with me now. You know, like I just have to, you know, you ride these out. And he's in a tough spot right now, but he'd been really good all season long. So you kind of deal with a little bit of a slump when if he's going to be as good as he has been through the first 2 months.
I mean, you get used to it.
You do. Yes. Yes. It's like a frog boiling in water, right? You know, you put the frog in when the water's cold and he'll sit in that pot until it's boiling hot. But you drop him in when it's already boiling. He'll hop right out.
Well, and we know that he'll get out of it. You know, we know that he'll come out of it at some point. So we just have to ride it out. Like we're now past the point where he does this badly for a while and we're like, oh God, this is who he is. Like, no, this is part of who he is. This is not the whole story, which is a relief. It's nice to know who one of these guys is.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. At which point do we boil Reese Hoskins alive?
I really just move right past that.
I see.
No.
I did not know what to say.
My question is, would you prefer a guy who is a 240 hitter all of the time or a guy who's like a 400 hitter for 2 months out of the season and a 180 hitter the other 4 months?
I feel like if you could know when that 180 guy was coming, you could swap him out and take the 400 guy and then do some. But, you know, I think your point is well taken. I think, you know, when Rhys Hoskins is hot, he obviously can carry the team. And you hope that when he's really struggling, the rest of the players can pick up like they have these last few games. So I guess I would take the streakier player, because those hot streaks, really, he can carry you for a few weeks when he's playing really well.
Certainly more interesting and dramatic.
Yes.
I would
yes.
say. Yeah. So I don't know. That crossed my mind, because I wonder how typical of like a 240 hitter he really is. Like, you know, we think about, oh, okay, this is a guy who, like, you know, isn't making hard contact or getting lucky a lot of the time. But, you know, it could just as easily be the case of a guy who's hot sometimes and cold sometimes. I mean, that's, I wonder, you know, I know he's capable of some pretty dramatic swings, you know, from one direction to the other. But this season seems, dare I say it, a little calmer in that regard. Like, it wasn't like he was lighting the world on fire and dropped off, right? He was just doing really well, and now he's just not doing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's fine. And, you know, we didn't intend on starting off the show with Rhys Hoskins, but I think that's a very interesting number that you said, the second on the team in hits. He's been really good this year, and he's a good first baseman for this team. I don't know if he's an all-star. You know, he was an all-star a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about who could be all-stars on this team, and he was, I think, top two or top three among first basemen in terms of FWAR, but I don't know if he's still there at this point. But regardless, let's talk about this series that just wrapped up against the Yankees, and let's talk about how this team has been playing so far in June overall. When that calendar flipped to June, they scored 17 runs at the game Liz was at against the Cincinnati Reds, and they really haven't looked back. The offense has been humming. 7-2 so far this month. They have a run differential entering the series against Los Angeles on Monday night of plus 28. Because, they have 61 runs scored so far in 9 games this month. That's a... if I do the math here, which I will do really quickly, they have a plus 27 run differential, and 61 runs divided by 9 games is they're scoring 6.7 runs per game so far this month, which is a far cry from what they were doing earlier in the month. And that's one of the things that we thought that this team was going to be coming into the season. You know, we thought that this offense was going to carry the team for the first time this year since the calendar flipped to June. The offense has looked like the 2020 offense that we were expecting. And so that's helped to cover up some of the defensive problems that we had seen with this team. And that's helped to cover up some of the, you know, maybe some of the inconsistencies with the pitching, both in the starting rotation and in the bullpen. And that game on Sunday where Aaron Nola just dominated the Yankees and they put up 7 on New York, that was the most fun, comfortable win of the season. And it was gratifying because it was against the Yankees, of course, who are struggling mightily this season, and you just hate to see it. How terrible they've looked, and
I've been
and
kicking
the
rocks all day.
I know, man. It's just wringing hands. I mean, your skin's gonna just tear your skin off with wringing your hands so much about those Yankees and
yelling
so what's,
at trains.
What's, right. What's the more promising development, you know, that's come out of this Yankees series? I'll say from this Yankees series in particular, these two games, but the offensive output in these two games against the Yankees or Aaron Nola's start, Justin, which of those two things do you think was the more promising development?
I think definitely the offense, without a doubt at this point. Like that shouldn't be it was great to see Aaron Nola do that. I would love to see more starts where he is successful that we're not talking about being a bounce back game. So I'm kind of shelving that concern at the moment and just happy that he was able to throw such a brilliant game against the Yankees. For me, it's the offense, because that's what the Phillies are going to need as they head out west. I think the offense for this team, the ceiling for this team's offense is probably higher than it is in some other areas. So it makes sense that when it's on and when it's working, it can cover up some of the blemishes this team has. Clearly, things are a little wobbly, even more so than they had been in the back end of the bullpen right now, with Neris entering one of his downturns. So to be able to build a cushion for the late innings, especially as they play the Dodgers, who are always a threat, and the Giants, because that's going to be a very dramatic series, and the Phillies really need to make hay in this road trip. So I feel like their offense is going to be able to, if it continues, you know, you're talking about 6.7 runs a game. That's going to be a huge, huge boon for them out west. And already in this game, as we're talking, they've managed to score a run. Their first two hitters got into scoring position. I mean, this is what they need to do. They can't take their foot off the gas right now because this is going to be a big swing, and it could mean a lot for this team and their future this season. So if this is working, then let's hope it keeps working, because this offense is really a threat when it's actually working.
No, listen, that's a good point. I mean, I know the debate about Aaron Nola just keeps going round and round. When he's really on, he is an ace. I mean, he looks phenomenal, but he does fall off every once in a while. But you see what he's capable of when you see what he did against the Yankees on Sunday. But when the offense has come around like this, we looked at this lineup in the offseason and looked at what we thought was a really deep lineup. And there's still no Didi Gregorius right now, but the lineup is super deep. Are you in agreement with Justin? Is that the most important development that we saw in this Yankee series? And I guess since the calendar flipped to June?
Yeah, definitely. If the offense is good and productive, they can overcome a poor Aaron Nola start. Aaron Nola cannot single-handedly win a game. Right. And so the offense needs to be there, because he just isn't consistent. And, you know, it feels familiar to hope, you know, to see a patch of brilliance and then have it be followed by, you know, 4 weeks of crap, you know, just to be blunt. And so I don't want to put my hopes on that. It would be nice if it continued. But for me, it's all about the offense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with Justin.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the most important part of the offense has been really what has held this team up, I think, was the leadoff spot for a lot of the season here. And having Harper back in the lineup and Real Muto back in the lineup, it just makes the lineup a whole lot longer. But the top of the lineup is producing now. I mean, you've moved Andrew McCutchen down in the lineup. He's now hitting fifth in the lineup. And the guys that they have up at the top of the lineup, Odubel Herrera and Gene Segura, have been tremendous up there. Segura specifically has hit in 10 out of the last 11 Phillies games coming into the game here on Monday night. He was hitting .339.
He hit 389 one tonight, too, just for the record.
And he had another hit tonight. Okay, so 11 out of 12 with three homers and 20 RBIs with a .475 slugging percentage. Odubel Herrera, since moving up to the top spot, has solidified everything. I mean, and that's been... It's really made a difference, those two guys at the top of the lineup. He's hitting .282, .345, .450 so far for the season, Odubel Herrera is. And he's got a hit in 7 out of his last 9 games. He's got 5 multi-hit games during that time. So, you know, it's interesting that, you know, these two guys who... They're not as important necessarily as Harper and Real Muto and the guy and the big thunder in the middle of the lineup, but having these two guys get on base and hit at the top of the lineup, Bryce Harper is finally going to get those RBI opportunities, Liz, that we've been crying for him to be able to get, because, you know, you can hit all the solo home runs in the world that he wants to, but they've got to get guys on in front of him, and finally that has been happening since the lineup got switched around.
Yeah, it's nice to see all of that production at the top of the lineup. It's nice to see Odubel Herrera. I will say a nice thing, because he's been hitting well. He's been, you know, a lot of the problems that we saw previously in his career on his on-field stuff, a lot of that is gone.
Yeah.
And I think it's largely because he has a manager who gives a crap about him doing the things he's supposed to do. Because I remember finding out that Gabe Kapler depended on his teammates to get him to do things, and he didn't.
Mm.
I remember this. And so he's applying himself, and he's being productive. And I have nothing negative to say about that.
Yeah, I guess, Justin, with Odubel Herrera, I mean, wins above replacement of 1.4, according to Fangraphs so far this season. I think we see, you know, when we think of lineups, you don't really think about how important the leadoff guy is, but it really does. It really does make a huge difference when he's up at the top of the lineup like that. Let me give you a couple more stats. In the leadoff spot this year, Herrera is hitting .319 with a .347 on base and a .532 slugging percentage and 47 at-bats there. Segura hitting .313, .382, .455 with two homers, 10 RBIs, and 9 walks in 99 at-bats in the second spot. So getting Gene Segura back has been huge. Is Gene Segura an all-star, guys? I mean, I don't know that he's played enough games. I was looking at some of the wins above replacement numbers. I don't know that he's among the top. Maybe he is among the top three second
baseman. I mean, that's what I was going to say
right
is that if anything, he's missing the games played. He did miss a chunk there, but I mean, yeah, it's tough to. This is why the Phillies are like, oh yeah, this, you know, we're our marketing's going towards Gene because he's been undoubtedly the engine of the Phillies offense. And when he wasn't here, they were worse off in a big way.
Yeah, they were.
The Phillies are lucky that Vlad Guerrero is in the American League, because otherwise I wouldn't be voting for any of them.
Vlad Guerrero plays an outfielder. He's outfielder, right?
I know. I'm just about all-stars in general.
Oh, you're just going to submit all votes for Vlad Guerrero.
Yeah, I'll find a way to do that.
Okay. I'm looking up Segura's numbers among second basemen in the National League coming into the game here on Monday night. Overall, Fangraphs wins. Yeah, he doesn't have quite enough plate appearances as a qualified hitter. But if you look at hitters with at least 130 plate appearances among second basemen, Gene Segura right now is sixth in Fangraphs wins above replacement, behind Jake Cronenworth, Ozzie Albies, Adam Frazier, Chris Taylor, and Max Muncy. But when you look at weighted runs created, and this is again, you know, one of those metrics that you can use to help kind of figure things out, he's still now fourth, and that's again with 47 games played. Again, about 12 to 13 fewer than everybody else. I mean, you can make the argument.
He's got the highest batting average among NL second basemen.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
if you care about that,
I do.
I care about that.
I care deeply about it.
Right. I mean, it's just a hair. It's a hair more than, as far as playing time goes, he's definitely got a few dents in him. Some of his numbers are near or at the top of the league. So you don't look stupid. This isn't like one of those years where the Phillies were like, oh, why not try to vote Tyler Goodell onto the All-Star team, folks? Like, this is, you know, he deserves to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, looking at his numbers, I realize it's been a while since I've looked at his, you know, baseball reference page. And these numbers, you know, are the best of his career, essentially, but they're not far off from his best seasons. Like,
he's always,
we got a different view of him in 2020, and I think that made, you know, he wasn't all that amazing last year. And this year he's just sort of taken all of that amazingness that he didn't spend there and just shoved it all into this season so far. Because it's just a relief to see him out there.
Yeah, it really is. And he's solidified the lineup again at the top of the lineup. He has had a number of 300 seasons in his career. And so Segura in the number two hole has been a machine. And then Herrera, I'm looking at some of his plate discipline numbers, and the numbers are really incredible. Like he has swung at a smaller percentage of pitches outside the strike zone this year than ever before, just 30%, down from his career of 36.7%. His swing percentage overall is way down. He's only swinging 44.3% of the time, down from 50.1%, and he's making way more contact on balls outside the strike zone. So take that for what it's worth, 70.9%. He's connecting, and his career is 63.1% with an outside the strike zone contact percentage. So he's just making a whole lot more contact. His whiff rate, his swinging strike rate, his swinging strike percentage, 8.4%. It's the first time in his career it's been under 10%. So Odubel Herrera making way more contact, both on pitches inside and outside the strike zone, and doing damage with them. So those two guys at the top of the lineup have made an absolutely huge difference for this baseball team and this offense. So as they enter now a series against the Dodgers and a series against the Giants, this is kind of an important week. And, you know, we keep wondering, you know, is this Phillies team any good? Do they believe they're any good? You know, it's interesting that Luke Williams walk-off home run, I don't believe they've lost since that game. We were wondering if that would be the signature moment of the season. Would it trigger something with this team? Would it lead to a little bit of momentum? So far, I think you'd have to say that, you know, anecdotally at least, they haven't lost since Luke Williams came back and hit that two-run home run to give the Phillies a walk-off 2-1 lead against the a 2-1 win against the Braves. And so, let's do a temperature check. How good are we feeling about this team right now, Justin? How strong are you feeling about this team being able to carry forward what they did during a very successful homestand against the Nationals, Braves, and Yankees into Los Angeles and San Francisco this week?
It does feel like things are still, you know, gearing up, but it's encouraging that they were able to win a game that didn't feel like it was about to be a loss at any moment. Doing that at least once, I think, goes a long way because, you know, I've been a big advocate of grab any win any way you can, but I am ready to start seeing some more confidence building wins from the Phillies. Mm-hmm. And, one game doesn't turn everything around, but that's exactly what we've been saying. And it's been more than one game. They're riding a hot streak, and it feels like they've kind of been leveling up opponent wise. Like, they start with the Nationals, who are in last place, and they win a series against them. They go up against the Braves, who are probably some of their best competition in the NL East, even though they're struggling in the same way the Phillies are, underperforming in a lot of the same ways. They managed to take a series from them. Then they play the Yankees, who are supposed to be one of the best teams in the American League, and they've been struggling, but they're still a really formidable lineup, and they win both of the games against them, which I wouldn't have necessarily predicted. And now they got to go out west and take on the Dodgers, who are also, you know, not as, I think, dominant at for stretches as people predicted them to be, but they're obviously one of the best teams in the National League. And then they got to go against the Giants, who are the best team in the National League, the best team in baseball if you're looking at records right now. So, you know, to be able to put together a couple of wins that weren't just like, well, we didn't drop the ball enough to lose. A couple of wins that were just like, yeah, no, this is something you can trust. You know, we're going to come through in more than one way a game. And like I said at the beginning, you know, this is a key stretch of the season where their offense coming through could potentially carry them. In the month of June, the Dodgers have scored 62 runs. The Phillies have scored 61. So they're performing at the same level as other good teams right now. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Giants have 38 runs in the month of June compared to the Dodgers and Phillies. I don't know what that means. I didn't look up exactly, you know. I'm waiting for them to stop winning all the time. I'm very ready for it. And hopefully this will be the series that does that, because I got to tell you, this is probably the first form of this team that I would have trusted to go out west and win a significant number of games. Every other time we've done this show, if they had been going out, if they've been going to California for six games against these two teams, I would have not. I would have assumed it would just be, you know, walking into a buzzsaw twice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Liz, I think that's fair, too, because this Dodgers team, again, they are behind the Giants in the National League West, and it is a very good division because the Padres are out there as well. But the Dodgers have not been – I mean, the run differential for the Dodgers is still fantastic. So I'm not trying to say that the Dodgers aren't really good. But, you know, they haven't been running away with the division. They are not far and away the best team in the National League right now. And so the Phillies are the hottest they've been so far this season and have done pretty well against some good teams. How confident do you feel that they can roll into Los Angeles and San Francisco and keep things going?
I think they have a shot. I think they have a shot. They could get steamrolled, and I feel like that's something that I want to keep in the back of my mind because I have to. But I feel confident. You know, they've been doing well. There's no reason it can't continue. There is no reason it can't continue. There's not. Right now, like, the pieces are in place for them to make a run. Not just, you know, to catch up with the Mets, but to, like, actually improve, perhaps, this division, which is far and away the worst in baseball. The top team in the NL East is 32-25. No one, every other division has one team that's won at least 40 games.
I mean, the teams at the top of the National League in general aren't separated by that much. Like, obviously, the Giants have 40 wins. You know, they're like I said, they've got the highest marks. But, you know, you look around the division other than the NL East, you look around the league other than the NL East, and they're all kind of clustered together. And the National League East is on a lower tier. But even so, you know, the Phillies have always been good enough to win this division. They just didn't no, they were, or something. they just weren't all on the field together. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but it's still early enough in the season where getting hot right now can make a huge difference right before the All-Star break.
No doubt about it. And
the division's wide open. It's there really for anyone to take.
Well, and this is the sixth largest payroll in baseball. This is a team that should be good. You know what I mean? Like, this is not a little engine that could team. This is a team that came into the season with a roster that was supposed to be good. This was a team that was supposed to be able to play with some of the better teams in the National League. You don't have a payroll over $200 million and expect to walk into Los Angeles with your tail between your legs in San Francisco. You know, I mean, these are teams that they should be able to go into these places and say, we're good. We have the sixth largest payroll in baseball. We got Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto. We got all our engines cooking right now. And, you know, I will feel a lot better by the time you all hear this podcast. We'll have a better idea how Spencer Howard did in this game by the time Tuesday morning rolls around. And as we're recording this, he had a really good first inning. We've heard that story before. Let's see how his combination with Bailey Falter works out in this particular game and see if that experiment works, you know, because the rest of the rotation should be good. Zach Wheeler has been the second best pitcher in the National League this year.
Yeah, the Phillies, Aaron Nola, I think, are going to miss Trevor Bauer and Walker Buehler out there in Los Angeles, too.
All right.
Really?
You get a little bit of fortune that way. So, you know, so I mean, I think if this team can go into Los Angeles, here's the underrated thing. If this team goes into Los Angeles, and let's say they win that series, and let's say they win the San Francisco series, that's a lot of ifs, and who knows, but that's got to give a team like the Phillies a ton of confidence to really maybe let them think.
Oh, it's on at that
point. It's on.
It is. Yeah.
it's great. You guys are in it now. You set this up. Let's see it to the end.
Close.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's the deal, too. In that home series the Phillies just played before the Yankee fans came and invaded Citizens Bank Park over the weekend, fans clearly still have not taken to this team. They have not believed. I mean, they got averaging 15,000 per game or something like that. You know, I didn't expect them to draw 40,000, but I was expecting more than what they've had in those Washington and Braves series. But you go into Los Angeles and San Francisco, you win those two series, and you know, I don't know when I don't have the schedule in front of me, but by the time they come home again, maybe now you've got the fan base talking a little bit. I mean, the fan base is going to be focused on the 76ers a little bit, and you know, everything that's going on with them. So there's going to be the 76ers are probably the big story in the Philadelphia sports world right now. But you know, the Phillies are hopefully, this is an opportunity for them to really kind of, you know, while much of the Philadelphia area is probably sleeping, to go out west and come home and really earn themselves a little bit of street cred here. And that's kind of what's on the line this week against a really good Dodgers team and a really good Giants team. And you know, they are supposed to be good. They are supposed to go into these places and at least play with these teams like equals, and not go into these different places thinking, well, gee whiz, I hope we can beat the Dodgers. They're real good, which is, I think, what the attitude this team has had over these last few years. I don't think, like we talked about earlier in the year, I don't think that there's nobody on this team to tell them they're good. You know, they need to prove it to themselves so that they know they're good.
This would do that. You know,
yeah,
and that's what I mean. I'm at my most encouraged for a road trip like this. And, you know, not for nothing, Alec Boehm is hitting .355 in June. Now,
is he
dominating? No, he's hit 11 singles, and tonight he struck out with the bases loaded and two outs. But, you know, it's a higher number than you'd expected. Certainly a higher number than he's been able to put out so far this year. So this is like, you know, when you're looking for little differences in the Phillies production as to why they are looking a little better, you know, that's probably one of them, where he's hit a few singles where in the first 2 months of the season, he would have struck out or grounded into a double play.
Fun little note here. The Phillies are 4-13 at Dodger Stadium since 2015. They have not won a series in Los Angeles since 2014. Can you name one of the winning pitchers in those three games?
Aaron Harang.
No.
Damn it.
What?
Thought I had it.
Carl Hamill
was a good guess. Nope.
No.
Chad Billingsley.
Oh, that would have been a good guess, but no, incorrect. Cliff Lee is one of them.
Keep forgetting he was around
I have more names.
Well, sorry,
no, he gave
you have
up.
Two more chances. You have two more chances.
Okay, see, the unfortunate part is now the name I want to remember. David Buchanan.
No.
Tyler Cloyd.
Nope.
Okay, I'm out of names. It.
Good Tyler Cloyd pull there. I'll give you, he was an electric left-hander who eventually had his career in the bullpen with the Phillies and then later went on to the Pirates.
Vance Worley.
The first part of his last name is a swear word. Antonio.
Oh, Antonio Bastardo?
No, Bastardo, yes. Antonio Bastardo. And then, what did you say, Justin?
Nothing. If you don't want to bleep it out, then I won't repeat
yeah,
it.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Right. And then the other one was Mike, the great Mike Adams, who I believe
never
won a game
in a million years would we have gotten that. We would have been here forever.
Forever.
Literally forever.
I know that's.
Because I, up until that moment, I had forgotten that a guy with that name had played for the Phillies ever.
That's why I volunteered that information.
My God.
I knew that. I know.
We have forgotten more about these terrible teams than there have been.
I'm not sure I could name five players from the 2014 Phillies. I'm really not sure.
I mean, by default, you kind of can.
No. Yeah. Just we might be able to fall backwards into some names there. But
I mean, Cole Hamels was still in that team.
Yeah, that's true. And Cliff Lee was there.
Chase
and I guess
Utley.
Don Brown was still there. Chase Utley. Yeah, I guess a lot of
Ryan
the
Howard
the old
was still playing
was still
for
there.
The team.
All right, so I can name five, but just I can't name another five. All right.
I think what we're saying is it's not a season worth thinking about.
right.
I was thinking about what like trying to find some new areas we hadn't dug into on the Dirty Inning yet, and I tried to go into the 2010s and was just like, you know what, this all just feels like it happened yesterday. No, I don't remember all of it, but when I look at a box score. If I can, you know, sometimes you can remember that game and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that. That sucked. I had a bad day and then I watched that and it sucked.
It was a waste of my time and I still remember it and I can't get it back.
This feels like it was last week and that sucks that it's a memory I have. So, yeah, you can't. It's just not. It's
too
just
soon.
Not worth it yet.
It's too soon.
It wasn't fun. Inning, right? It wasn't funny,
no.
You know?
No. No. That's right. There were no baseball players nicknames like Locomotive.
Right.
Or
it's great that we have stats like that, that the Phillies have shown up to Dodger Stadium and just tied their shoes, you know, together.
Together.
I feel like they've done that a lot of stadiums.
Their pants have fallen down and they've hopped from base to base sucking on their thumbs. Like, that's a great statistic. Great pool, John. I love analytics and math.
Analytics are
for
the
this
best.
Reason.
Numbers.
I love
you know,
them.
Just pulling those high-tech stats like wins and losses in a certain place. I love that. That's really been the Phillies. What's it called? Biggest challenge. Just like one of their elements of the last few years is like the Dodgers specifically. It's like they can't beat them, and then they just they give up.
Yeah, they get intimidated.
Kind of another reason why this is a great test for this team. It's like, hey man, are you a different version of this team? Or are you just is this just more of the same? Because for a while there, it felt like it was just more of the same. You're showing a little life now, and the Dodgers are a great test for a team that's showing a little life.
Yeah, going with confidence.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Phillies' former pitching coach, Brian Price, and I want to talk a little bit about the Phillies' red jerseys. So some news came out about the red jerseys this week. So we'll tackle that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So let's get some jersey talk out of the way here first. Did you know, I don't know if you guys saw this before the game, but this week, I think it's on Wednesday, and then in one of the games out in San Francisco, the Phillies, instead of wearing their road gray, are going to wear their batting practice red jerseys. Sunday in San Francisco, they're going to wear their spring training red jerseys, and they're apparently going to do that sporadically on the road this season instead of the road grays. I've never liked the road grays. I think road grays are really dull. I think there are so many different things you can do aside from just put on a gray uniform. And so I'm all for getting rid of that. But I know that the red jerseys are a little polarizing. What do you guys think of the red jerseys? Are you guys pro red? Liz, are you pro red jersey or anti red jersey?
Sure. It's colors. It's colors. It's different. It's different than what they had been. Those grays are boring. I hate them. So let's introduce a little bit of color into the wardrobe. If they're not going to do like a light blue with a maroon pinstripe, then that's fine.
I feel like the grays aren't pretty, but I don't know. The away team should always look a little crappier, I think. Did you know the whole point I mean, does everyone know this? The whole point of away jerseys being a darker color is because teams couldn't get them laundered while they were on the road back in the day, and it hid stains and dirt better.
Is that
so
right?
That's, wow. I believe that is true. So, like, you're the away team is always supposed to look a little dinkier. And, yeah, I don't know if they've reached the point of classic yet, but I think in my mind they have because, you know, they're the same uniforms. The Phillies haven't really changed uniforms really significantly since I was a kid. So I don't mind the grays. I am an advocate for more color, and part of me feels like the Phillies, I know this isn't technically true, but it feels like the Phillies' only color is red most of the time. Like, yeah, I know they sprinkle some blue in there, and they do the throwbacks with the powder blue and the maroon and all that. Like, there's other, if you were getting their marketing manual, there would be more than just the red in there as options for a design team. But, like, if you're thinking red is our color, and then you just double down on red, sure. I'm kind of just more curious, why are they doing this? What is the reason given?
Oh, Bryce Harper doesn't like the grays. Oh. He really likes the reds, and so he wants to do the red jerseys more.
I forgot to mention
that.
That's a way bigger thing.
That's a way bigger story than
Bryce Harper apparently, you know, his level of influence. This is an indication of his level of influence. The team, you know, is so locked down, and you're not getting any whispers of its inner workings or anything. But, you know, one thing we debated
demands.
Was how much voice he had. Like, did it really mean something when he was like, sign JT or I will publicly complain, pretty much probably, or post something passive aggressive on social media. And then eventually they did, and it probably wasn't all because of that, but like, how influential is the voice of the guy you signed to a 13-year deal? And we're learning, you know, hey, significantly
kind
influential.
I can
make one comment and the colors of our uniforms change.
So here's how Matt Breen reported it on Twitter. He said, the Phillies will wear red spring training jerseys on Wednesday at Dodger Stadium and Sunday in San Francisco. They will wear them sporadically on the road for the rest of the season. The players, notably Bryce Harper, wanted to wear them.
How many players do you think it was? Do you think it was more than just Bryce, or do you think that's just them trying to water down the idea that he can do that just by himself?
I think it was like Bryce, Reese, maybe Alec Bohm. I feel like it's hard for me to imagine JT Romuto or Alec Bohm really having a strong opinion on anything.
Yeah,
I feel like Kutch would probably be a part of a thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Like that.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
I don't see real Muto being a part because, like, yeah, as buddy-buddy as he and Bryce are, I feel like this is the kind of thing where he's just like, I don't give a crap. Like,
he's honestly, I think, the most Chase Utley player that's been on the team since Chase Utley.
That might be true. It's scary when you invoke Chase Utley's name. Everybody's very strongest feelings come to the surface. So there's that moment of just like, oh no, what do you say? But I think that's not incorrect.
No, because he's got a type. You know, like we learned recently in an Athletic article, he was a little bit more playful occasionally, but always in a very weird, intense, competitive way. It to the point where he did not care about anything else around baseball. And I feel like JT Realmuto gives off that vibe. No disrespect to Chase Utley. I'm not trying to, you know, say that JT Realmuto is the new Chase Utley because he's not. But we haven't had anyone that sort of laser focused and outwardly bland for a while.
Don't worry, guys. I'll dox Liz later tonight on Twitter, and we can all respond appropriately to this.
That's
to
how
this sentiment.
That's how this works. That's how this works. For sure.
No, I think that's great. I think that's a great comparison. That's very true. Yep. You know, he's definitely a leader, but he's not super vocal and laser focused, like you said. That definitely describes both of them. So yeah, I think you're right.
One thing that has come down, I wasn't planning on talking about this, but Jeff Passan just released a story on ESPN as we were recording this that Major League Baseball has announced that starting on Tuesday, so players caught with any foreign substance will face a 10-day suspension. So basically we're talking about pitchers and the sticky stuff on their hands, the spider tack, the industrial glue, all that kind of stuff. Man, I remember back in the day, like it was in the late 80s, there was a rash of pitchers getting kicked out of ballgames and suspended for foreign substances. I remember Kevin Gross with the Phillies one time had a piece of sandpaper taped to his glove that he would use to kind of scuff up the ball in order to get a better grip on it. And I remember one of the Negroes or something like that. Where the umpires came out to see if he had something on him, and they made him empty out his back pockets, and he's empty on his back pockets, like, what? Nothing's back there. What? And like a nail file came flying out of the back of his back pocket. If you look on like a blooper reel,
I think he was throwing it. I think he like reached into his pocket, grabbed it, and tried to throw it real quick.
Yes,
before
it's
they
exactly
saw
what
it.
He did. Yeah,
wow,
exactly.
That is a
like a
very,
really bad magician.
That's like it's the most panic. That's a panic move.
They of course saw it immediately.
Yeah, no, he got suspended for 10 games. Yeah, well, he couldn't help it. I mean, it's a nail file. I mean, he's got a nail file back there. So he said, "What? I don't know." What guys?
I've always admired that footage because he was just like, "I have to. Like, I'm gonna ride this lie to the bitter end until their eyes are literally on the evidence that proves my guilt. I am totally innocent."
Right. And you realize at no point probably did he ever think about what he would do.
No.
If the umpire came up, like, he never thought, like, all right, this if that happens, then what I need to do is fold it up in tiny little squares and shove it in my underwear.
I'd like to see a pitcher see an umpire come out to do an inspection and then, like, real quick slip a pill into their mouth. And by the time the umpire gets there, there's just, like, white foam coming out of his mouth. He's just down on the ground.
I really thought you were going in an eat the nail file direction. You went somewhere totally different.
Somewhere totally different. It's a distraction. It's a distraction technique. Yeah, I love it. But I mean, well, my point is that, you know, pitchers have been suspended for this kind of stuff before. And I remember it used to happen quite a bit. I mean, you couldn't throw spitballs. I mean, it was a different kind of thing. You know, spitballs would allow, you know, Phil Niekro, maybe it was Phil Niekro, I think, actually, who had the nail file thing. But, you know, there have been all kinds of pitchers who made a living out of throwing the spitball, which was supposedly illegal, but some, you know, get the Vaseline and all that kind of stuff. I know there's a big debate in baseball, Liz, about the, you know, what, and it's probably a combination, but, you know, the blame shifting that's going on with Major League Baseball, kind of blaming the pitchers for the sticky stuff, but also the baseballs that were changed by Major League Baseball also affecting the lack of offense around the game. You know, I think both things are true here. Both things suck. I know some players are okay with pitchers using some amount of tacky stuff so that they're able to control the baseball and so that they don't get hit. But, I think that it swung too much in the other direction. I also think Major League Baseball made a huge mistake in what they did with the baseball this offseason. I thought Pete Alonso's comments this week were really interesting when he's talking about looking at the free agent classes and noting that there's going to be so many big offensive stars hitting free agency this year, that he's saying outright Major League Baseball changed the ball to suppress offense this season so that this coming off season, when free agency rolls around, offensive numbers will be down and teams won't have to pay as much to some of these offensive stars in free agency as possible. So, Liz, let me get your thoughts on all of this here. Starting on Tuesday, umpires are going to start enforcing the rules. It'll result in 10-day suspensions for pitchers who are caught using this kind of stuff. How much do you think umpires are going to be going out there and targeting pitchers to see if they've got stuff on them?
I mean, we're going to find out what mm-hmm. type of umpires we have, whether they're willing to go with the unspoken rules, which is you can have some, or whether they're going to be sticklers, whether they're going to be Joe West about it.
Oh, Joe West wasn't going to be a stickler. Joe West just has another channel he can use to do something that gets attention during a game. Like, this is just another thing he can just decide to do. Because that's kind of where baseball's leaving it. It's, you know, like, oh, it's the honor code or whatever. And they're just going to let umpires like Joe West, who prefer to make a call some nights rather than others, this is just another option for them to be able to do that. Oh, I don't like, you know, didn't Joe West take a card from somebody?
Pitcher? One of the Phillies pitchers.
Something
yeah,
that's
forget
not
who was,
illegal. But he just decided right. He wasn't allowed to do that night. Now he's got an actual rule he can use to patrol the mound in a way that the league will back him up on.
Yeah, like this is just MLB honestly trying to shift attention away. Like, oh, you don't say MLB changed the ball this offseason. Because I know that sticky stuff has gotten more prevalent over the years. But, you know, and the effectiveness of it has changed. But, you know, hitters, the baseball has so much to do with this. Has so much to do with what's happening. Like this, they're just trying to shift attention and put it all on the players and umpires. So nothing else happens, because these types of instructions come from the top down. This is not a player just deciding to do it. This is an organizational thing. So we'll find out what's going to happen. I think this is a terrible idea for everybody. And MLB just simply does not want to take responsibility at all for changing the ball yet again. And if the Players Association doesn't try to make this an issue, I mean, I'm praying that this is part of the negotiations. There at least be some kind of standardizing of the baseball, that there be some kind of independent process and specifications, that there be something in place so MLB just can't indiscriminately change the baseballs that they now own the manufacturing of. They've completely cut off anyone from the outside. They are the only ones that control these baseballs. The players have no say. Like, this is a huge problem, and MLB is just waving this flag that says, you know, sticky substances, and hoping everyone is just going to assume that that's it.
It's very transparent. And yeah. By the way, how easily do you guys believe Pete Alonso's bluntly stated conspiracy? Because I believe it instantly and easily.
I think that he's giving Major League Baseball too much credit.
I agree.
Especially
with
since the first time that this baseball stuff happened, I believe it was unintentional. Because there was really no reason for it to change, for the baseball to change, other than just a manufacturing error. Because it had never happened before, and there had been plenty of reasons for it to happen before. And it happened in the favor of hitters, who were always going to get bigger contracts than pitchers. Like, that makes no sense. So that was definitely an accident. And I think everything after that is them just trying to figure out what the hell they did wrong, and trying desperately to fix it. When they thought they did, they're like, all right, well, now maybe we can do something different. Now maybe we can try and tilt the scale in another direction. I wouldn't be surprised if it had a financial motive, but I also just see it being like, this is what we believe baseball needs to be. This is what we think the balance should be. And there's been too much offense. We want a balanced game.
Well, that makes sense. And Go ahead, John.
I agree that I think Major League Baseball is trying to blame shift away from the baseball. They don't want to talk about the baseball and the changes made to the baseball and the effect that it's had on offense around the league. But I do believe that the grip enhancers, and players will tell you, have publicly spoken that the grip enhancers have gone too far in this particular case. Passan notes from his piece, noting that the sample size is small, that the league-wide batting average since June 3rd. When the first reports about the league's crackdown surfaced is 247, up from 236 up to that point in the season. Also noting that the league-wide spin rate on fastballs is down substantively too, a sign that already some pitchers have stopped using foreign substances altogether or at least switched grip agents. How much do you believe in that?
You can't. It's... Offense always increases in June because the temperatures are getting hotter everywhere.
But what about the spin rate stuff that he mentioned?
You can't.
I mean, I don't have the numbers for that.
I'm going to say you cannot make any actual substantive declarations about what is happening with that small of a time frame. You just can't. It's 2 weeks. 2 weeks into the baseball season, no one knows what's happening. Everything is confusing. I refuse to. We need more data, and anyone trying to make a pronouncement based on such a small sample has a motive.
I was going to say, that seems a rushed data job there. I mean, we can't even, it's still pretty early in the season to be using wins above replacement to evaluate guys. Like honestly, that's how like delicate statistically you can be. And like in trying to back up something like that, that used like the last two weeks.
From June 3rd.
To try and prove something, like not even 2 weeks, like a week and a half. Like, come on, guys.
No, I mean, I think you're right. It's too small a sample size. We'll have to wait to see how the rest of the season shakes out.
Anytime Major League Baseball makes itself the hero of the story is a reason to disbelieve. And that's what's happening here.
But do you think the pitching? But do you think the sticky stuff is having an effect, Liz? I guess that's what I want to get. I want to figure out from you is how much do you think the sticky stuff, all the grip enhancers, has it gone to the point where it's become performance enhancing instead of just performance helping?
Maybe. I think that's definitely a possibility. But the annoying thing is that we have no idea because they changed the ball this year. We have no idea what the baseline is. We can't judge it based on last year, which is a very small sample, 60 games. We can't base it on the year before because the ball was different then. We have no idea because they keep changing it. I have no problem believing that sticky substances have gone too far. My problem is that they're just doing this to shift attention away from the fact that what they did also has an impact here. Like, it doesn't matter if sticky stuff is changing things. It doesn't matter until you admit culpability in what's happening. Until you talk about what's happening. They're just doing this. Like, they're not saying, we think that spin rates are too high and there is too much pitching and there's too little offense, so this is what we're doing. It's just, they're just cracking down on sticky substances. And that's
it. I think if you looked at anything that provided a so-called competitive edge in baseball, you'd be able to find multiple people who were taking it too far. I mean, you can look at, I think, just about anything players do to try and, you know, whether it's dicey legally or just something everybody else is doing. I mean, every generation has the thing that tarnished baseball for them. And in most cases, it's a version of that, whether you're talking about steroids, whether you're talking about grip, whether you're talking about, like, analytics. You know, people go too far with it, and it ruins things. It makes the game, you know, different. So I feel like it does feel kind of just arbitrary that they're pointing and looking at, well, pitcher grips. Haven't done that one in a while. You know, just feels like that's what makes it feel so transparent to me.
I don't know. I think I'm not one to sit here and put MLB up on my shoulders and carry it around the field in victory. You know what I mean? Like, I hear everything you're saying. But I will also say, too, I've listened to some of what the players have had to say about it, you know, pitchers included, and they seem to think it's gone way overboard and that spin rates have gone through the roof and that it's had a big impact. So I think both can be true, and I'm fine with the crackdown. I think the crackdown is fine. I think it's you know, maybe it's something that could have waited until the All-Star break when pitchers have a little bit of time to kind of wean themselves off of the stuff. But you know, it's these rules have been in place for a long time, and there was a long time where pitchers, like I was mentioning at the start of the segment, pitchers were not allowed to have any of this kind of stuff where you could increase your spin rate. You could get a better grip on the ball and mess up with your curl. I don't know how. I guess here's my larger point. I don't know how they allowed it to get to this point. Is what I'm gonna say. How it was allowed to get to the point where you're using this glue that was designed for professional weightlifters, you know, the World's Strongest Man competition, so they don't lose their grip on the 2,000-pound barbell that they're trying to lift over their heads. These guys who created these products, they had no idea they were being used in Major League Baseball. If you're using something that the World's Strongest Man uses to help lift a refrigerator over his head to help you throw a curveball, you probably should get that out of the game.
We should ask the umpires about that. I wonder why.
I would love to.
I wonder why it's,
if they could
if,
ever talk.
Yeah, I wonder why it's gotten to this point. If, you know, they know what the rules are and it's their job to make sure that they are followed. It's almost like this is stuff that organizations have been doing and umpires have chosen to look the other way or were directed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was gonna say it's not something you hear, you know, hitters complaining about too much. Obviously there you risk being, you know, sounding whiny or however that would reflect poorly on the players as a whole. But, like, still, if it had reached a point where the pitchers were unfair, wouldn't there be, you know, more documented, maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's a ton, but, like, more documented post-game interviews where somebody's like, yeah, you know, when you're putting that much grip on the ball, you can get away with anything. You're throwing the ball unnaturally for a human. Now, I do wonder, like, how much credence do you give something like Josh Donaldson tweeting about, like, oh, yeah, like, we all know about this. We're all furious about it. And we all have, like there's a book with names in it of guys who are the worst defenders. Like, you know, does that exist?
Josh Donaldson is full crap.
I don't know. I could see Josh Donaldson having a burn book, like a very ornately decorated, you know, fluorescent colors and feathers and stuff on it. Yeah, I could see him doing that.
I could see him being in the movie Mean Girls.
Yeah. I can see him. I can see him being a real, you know what I mean? Real easily.
Oh, it's easy to see because that's what he is. He is that player. Because how many other players tweeted something like that?
That's what. A small amount, if not just Josh Donaldson. And that's my question. Like, if you brought up umpires, which I think is a better argument, saying like, hey, okay, if this is so bad, where have you guys been? Like, this is just not something that we talk about anymore until very recently. But in the same vein, do you think there's been an undercurrent of discontent among Major League Baseball's hitters? Because pitchers are using more foreign and more foreign substances?
Well, until the last couple of years, offensive numbers were through the roof. So I don't know how I think this is a fairly recent development. Mm. I mean, I think that, you know, going back to 2019, offensive numbers were still awesome. You know, it's only been, and last year, like Liz said, you had the shortened season, you had the pandemic shortened season. And really it's, you know, over these last couple of years, I think most of us also were kind of looking at the launch angle revolution and, you know, for all the strikeouts, you know, for having more strikeouts than hits in Major League Baseball and all that kind of stuff. That's been getting most of the attention on, not that offensive numbers overall were down, like runs per game, but the batting average numbers have been falling. We've been looking at the approach hitters were taking and swing path, launch angle, all this kind of stuff. Hitters not caring about striking out as long as they get the chance to hit the 3-run homer. Well, now we're kind of seeing... We're seeing a little bit of a shift in that, and now it's kind of the blame is going over to too much spin rate, and you know it's making it impossible for hitters to hit, and it's increasing velocity because spin rate is higher than it's ever been. So, you know, there's always a new excuse, there's always a new reason. It doesn't mean they're all wrong, and it could very well be that the sticky stuff is having an impact. And you know, like Liz said, the Major League Baseball has robbed us of the control factor in this particular experiment. So it's really hard to say one way or the other, you know, whether or not this crackdown is going to have a big effect and if that's going to be the reason for it, or if it's just going to be because we entered the summer months and the ball flies a little bit better in the summer months. We really won't know. I guess we'll have to wait until the 2022 season and see how the ball's different and everything else.
Yeah, weird. Maybe that does have an effect on free agency.
Yeah, I look forward to the first crucial game that an umpire's decision to call out some foreign substance a pitcher is using deeply impacts it. I look forward to the first one of those.
Yep, that'll be
fun. Inevitable.
Good times for everyone. It is, absolutely.
And I bet Joe West will be involved.
Oh, I didn't want to bring him up again, but
until he retires, we have to hail insults upon him.
When I'm imagining that situation, it is, of course, Joe West.
All right. Well, let's wrap up this episode of the podcast with some final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts from you before we wrap up, buddy?
Hey, JT Realmuto, you know, best catcher in baseball. Weren't sure if he was going to come back. Then he came back. He said he was always going to come back. He's supposed to be really good. He is really good. Yeah. He never really hasn't been very good. Decided to take some of that goodwill out for a spin the other day and put on a Celtics jersey for the Phillies road trip when they were all dressing in NBA jerseys. And I got to tell you, okay, cool, man. You have slightly less goodwill than before. I look forward to you building that back up.
And there was one, didn't one of the Phillies players, I didn't know if it was Luke Williams or Nick Maton, was wearing a Brooklyn jersey.
Luke Williams, yeah.
Captain America, that was a bad move, my friend. send him down, right? Liz, final thoughts from you?
I was going to talk about how I'm sorry for sounding like a crackpot all the time. But instead, I will say that Luke Williams, speaking of, has 100 friends and family at the Dodgers game tonight, and they are loud. Wow. I hope he gets a chance. I hope Girardi lets him take an at bat.
You know who also is there tonight at the game?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Is Chase Utley as Chase. All
Special
of Philly's all Philly's Twitter's eyes bulged out of their heads and their hats flew off the top of their heads as well, like cartoon characters.
Oh, and now the Phillies broadcast is going to replay the Matt Stairs home run. As you're watching this.
Memories. Show some Jonathan Broxton memories. Yeah. Let's watch.
On the Dodgers broadcast, yeah, they're showing Phillies highlights from a much more recent era.
I'm sure they are. And by the way, you mentioned Luke Williams' family out. Spencer Howard is from the L.A. area. His family is out in attendance watching him pitch tonight. And through three innings, he's maintained his velocity, has set the Dodgers down in order 1-2-3 in each of the first three innings. He was throwing 95 there in the third inning. So that's certainly good to see. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Liz, for joining me on the podcast once again. And, folks, don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season for all the bonus stuff there and tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. We're at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.